Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Imagine being elected president of the American Dental Association right before, unbeknownst to you, one of the biggest years for public dentistry and being on the forefront of a big old debate around fluoride. Well, that's what Dr. Brett Kessler walked into when he took on his presidency of the American Dental Association this last year. We talk about the triumphs and the grief and some of the difficulties for him this last year in his position of service and how he was challenged quite a bit, and it became what he calls one of the hardest years of his life, and he really had to use all of the tools he ever learned in his world of sobriety. Brett is a dear friend both personally and professionally and has forever changed my personal and professional life. And we talk a bit about that as well on this episode. And what's next? After serving as president and then also being a dentist for your entire career, shares with us his next chapter, which I'm super excited to share with you today. And a lot of what he talks about is also what we talk about inside the Empower Leadership Experience for Women in Dentistry, which is really unpacking what is it that you want to do next in your life and what are your core desires and beliefs and really figuring out what are your values. And Brett really had to dig into his values as well, as he was in this really critical service position that he thought he was ready for and realized that it was a whole lot more than he ever anticipated. And his mental, spiritual, emotional, and physical fitness really had to come into play in order for him to serve the way this industry deserves. Let's dive in. Hi, Brett. So good to have you back on the Real Talk of Dental. It's always such an honor to have you on. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today because you are officially complete with your term as president of the American Dental Association. So you're heading into a new era of your life and a new chapter. And I want to hear all about this last year and also what's next for you. So I've been really looking forward to this conversation. And obviously, you know, I'm a huge fan of you and you've had such a huge impact on my life personally, professionally, in my sobriety and recovery too. So all the different angles, and I know you bring all of that into your work as well. So I'm excited to see how this all blends together in this conversation. So welcome back and tell me, how the hell was this last year for you? Let it rip.
Thanks, Brandy. It is great to be here. If my memory serves correctly, I was your very first guest on your podcast.
You were my very first guest. Yes.
Oh, it's so good to be back here. And it's been like almost a year. Has it been? How long has it been?
Well, no. We launched in August.
All right. So half a year.
So less than a year. 6 months. Yeah. About half a year.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's great. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're still doing this. You got a great message to share, and I appreciate the opportunity to be back here. Yeah, last year as president of the American Dental Association, one of the most challenging years of my life, but to be honest with you, it was probably the best year of my life. I had this deep sense of gratitude to have the opportunity to lead the organization and the profession. I had a very busy year, lots of interesting things that popped up, but I honestly, going in, I had a very clear idea of the things that I wanted to try and drive forward, and I got to accomplish all of that, despite all the drama du jour and the interesting happenings that came in front of my desk. So it was one of the most challenging years of my life, but honestly, one of the best years of my life, and something I'll always look back fondly on because I know I gave everything, every minute of every single day I was in office.
Yeah, and what were some of the highlights for you this last year?
So many. I guess I would start with last January, right before Donald Trump's inauguration, the ADA, we took out the back page ad on the Washington Post in the front section and put an editorial there that basically said, we are the American Dental Association. This is who we are. This is what we stand for. And this is what we can do to help make America healthy. Basically throwing it out to the new administration and to the world that we're going to be, we want to work with you to help improve the health of the citizens of this country. And the world was watching. And so it was one of the biggest media days of the year. We set out from the get-go of the administration in a big way. Followed that up with a personal letter from me to President Trump and to every single member of Congress, basically explaining a lot of these things, that how we can align with the MAHA project that they were embarking on to make America healthy again from an oral health perspective. And there were obviously things that we could help with, and there were things that we were going to kind of challenge against them. And I think we did both. And so it was great. And that, for the first time ever, the American Dental Association, is in my 20 years active in the organization, that we had a proactive legislative advocacy agenda. And you know, we've always been kind of reactive to things. And this time we were proactive, and we let the world know about it. And I felt it was a great for our members to see that we're fighting for best practices. And then, you know, then our members are more successful and the whole profession wins, you know, and that's really what I focus on, is trying to drive the profession forward for best practices and obviously honor the trends that are happening within our profession in a good way. And it was just a lot of fun being able to do that.
Yeah. I feel like dentistry was front and center this last year, probably more than in the past at a federal level. I'm glad that you were at the helm and all of that was going on. And I know, you know, you've shared too, you know, just in our conversations and vocally as well, just being in that position, you automatically inherit a giant bullseye on your back, like anyone in that sort of top leadership role. What did you learn about yourself undergoing some of the big challenges that come with that personally, professionally? I'm sure some of it was uncalled for. Some of it could have been over the top. I mean, just anyone in leadership deals with, especially nowadays with so many ways people can voice their opinions, you know, through social media, the internet, text, emails, I mean, et cetera. There's so many ways that people can come down on others, and you see it every day, right? So with you experiencing that, yeah, what did you learn about yourself enduring that this last year?
Well, I prepared myself for it. And, you know, and I don't know, any of your listeners don't know, I'm in recovery from substance abuse disorder. I'm 27 years sober. And in order to get sober, I had to change the way my brain works. And so I did that with a very direct and intentional mindfulness practice. And so my mindfulness practice was definitely one of my key tools that helped me show up every single day as my best self. Throughout the past 27 years that in my path of sobriety and growth and leadership, you know, I use those tools to really discover who I am and what I stand for. And when I chose a leadership path, you know, and where I want to direct my leadership skills and attributes, you know, the values had to align. And, you know, the American Dental Association values and my values are very much in line. As president, I had no personal opinions this year. I am the representative of the organization. And so, you know, I had to, you know, espouse their core values, the mission of the organization and the vision of the organization. And the mission was basically, you know, to improve the health of the public and ensure our members succeed. And they go hand in hand. It's not either one or, one before, one after. It is both. And in my mind, all boats rise with the rising tide. And in my 20 years of leadership at the levels that I served, I was very diligent about, you know, talking about core values, mission, vision at the places that I led at. And at the ADA, I've never heard them discuss that. And that was the basic guardrails, the foundation of everything that we do. And so I was deemed, I was misunderstood in many ways, because many people didn't know what the core values were. Many people didn't know the mission of the ADA and the vision. And there were a lot of, you know, people, you know, it was a little disappointing, some of the attacks that I took from colleagues and friends at the time, but, you know, that just comes with the job and that's okay. And, you know, so being in this role, it's like being in a crucible, and the pressure of the day-to-day challenges, you know, and it was 18-hour days on a regular basis. I was on the road 225 days last year. I gave over 200 presentations last year. And, you know, and I had to be able to, you know the audience I was in front of every hour of every day, because sometimes they had four or five presentations in a day, and they had nothing, the themes of those presentations had nothing to do with each other, and the audience was completely different. So I had to be able to shift my focus to be effective in front of the people that I was in front of. And that crucible, the pressure of that, you know, would have destroyed me had I not had a solid foundation in my mindfulness and you know, and knowing when I needed to back off and reset and sharpen my saw. Habit 7 of 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey, knowing when I needed to back off, reset, recharge, so I could rally for the next one. And so I learned a lot about my triggers. I learned I can push myself in great ways. I learned I had these abilities to be able to shift gears pretty quickly. And I felt I did a great job dealing with the drama, as you know, not, I shouldn't say drama, so important and urgent, and then, but also important but not urgent stuff. You know, I was able to spend time on a regular basis building those foundational things that may not be pay off in the near future, but will pay off down the road as we get the foundation on there. And I feel, you know, that we set out to accomplish a lot of these things, and we did it. And now that I'm not in office, I see the ADA and especially the current leadership, you know, taking some of these things and running with it and pushing it. And so it's I feel, you know, because I was able to show up as my best self on a regular basis, I was able to accomplish that. I was not perfect by any means, and I'm a human being, and I'm fallible, and sometimes emotions did take over and I didn't act correctly. And, you know, in my recovery program, if I'm wrong, I promptly admitted it. And when I was wrong, I promptly admitted it. And I went and tried to make things right. But I didn't hide my humanness, I'll be honest, but I tried to mitigate those hard days. Let's put it like that.
Yeah. And you know, I know even in the spirit of recovery, we're taught to not have, you know, expectations, although we are human, like you said. So I'm sure you had some expectations of what the role would entail. And that would be wise just in general as leadership to do your preparation going into it as best you can and learning from the people that have come before you and things like that. With all your preparation and, you know, training, because I know you're also a really big trainer for almost everything. You put a lot of time and energy into being your best self, whatever you're about to go into. What did you experience that you were not expecting, either positive or negative?
Great question. So I was the president-elect for a year under Dr. Linda Edgar. And, you know, and she, you know, she was the president, and she did, you know, had her goals and things that were really important to her. And I supported it. And in the meantime, I'm preparing myself for, you know, the day that I took over. You know, there's a well-defined day that I start and a well-defined day that I end. And those are not negotiable. But Linda set me up really well. And I felt, you know, the day before I took over, everything's, you know, I'm ready. I felt I was prepared and stuff like that. Yeah, but the day I took over, the weight of the responsibility was a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. Because the ADA means so much to the world. And for, you know, again, I felt this deep sense of gratitude for me to be at the helm, you know, and but the weight of the responsibility was much bigger than I expected. And I had to approve, you know, all sorts of communications on a daily basis that we were sending to various legislators, both national and state, you know, and you know, and Health and Human Services with the anti-fluoride narrative and the anti-science narrative, you know, that we kind of knew was going to happen, but we didn't know it was going to happen to the level that it did. You know, as a business, the ADA is a business, an organization, and, you know, and I felt we saw some things in the tea leaves that you know, kind of concerned me, and our board acted along that line and ended up, you know, parting with our executive director. And, you know, and he resigned because the board had a different direction that they wanted to the ADA to go than he did. So as we were going through that process, I think every board member that I got to serve with, you know, also felt the weight of the responsibility it took to be a steward of this profession was evident. And so I felt like we raised that awareness that these are the leaders that are going to drive the profession. You know, we've been around for 160 some years, and I want it to be around for several thousand more years as we move forward. And so it was a lot more responsibility than I prepared myself for it. But, you know, I'm also an endurance athlete, and I've done some crazy long runs at and races like the Ironman. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times in the Ironman race, 14 hours plus that I, you know, wanted to quit, but I just kept pushing. And so this year was a metaphor that I had experienced in the Ironman. So I'm like, I had experience. I know how, you know, it gets hard, and when you want to quit, you can keep moving forward. And so I was able to do that and push through.
Yeah, I always relate so much in life to fitness stuff, because I just think it's so, so parallel. But I mean, I got to ask, what's harder, this last year or doing an Ironman? What do you think?
This last year was much harder. Honestly.
Okay. Yeah.
Ironman is one day. But the cool thing was, you know, to be using the Ironman metaphor, the Ironman was just the last 140 miles of my training. I spent thousands of hours leading up to that, preparing for that. Mm-hmm. And I viewed, you know, the training that I had to do to accomplish on game day is the same thing that I did on game day when I became president. And, you know, and I knew what I needed to do on a regular basis. I didn't know what was going to happen on any given day for the most part. I had a calendar. Yeah. I knew when I had meetings and stuff like that, but all the unexpected, because I was able to show up in a good mindset, I was able to deal with the expected as well as best I could with the unexpected. And I developed a really good team of leaders, you know, in Dr. Rosato, who's the current president. I relied on my officers, the VPs and the treasurer and the Speaker of the House, as well as my board, as well as key people around the country that I can rely upon to help, you know, help manage the day-to-day expected as well as the unexpected. And I feel like we did a hard reset for the ADA, and I think we're driving the profession forward in the best possible way as a result of that.
Hey, I just want to pop in on today's episode and talk to you about this new GPT I wrote called Boundary Boss GPT. And it's for those moments where you've said yes to something and immediately felt that pit in your stomach, or maybe you've now written 5 drafts of an email because you're trying not to sound mean, even though you're exhausted and you swear you've said this thing so many times to the same person, or you're kind of sick and tired of staying late, taking it on, smoothing things over, and wonder why you're the one that's always burning out. A lot of the conversations that I have on this podcast, we often hear about people hitting these walls of burnout and oftentimes not even knowing what to say. So that's why I built Boundary Boss GPT. It's kind of like having me in your pocket when you're about to respond to a text, email, or team issue, and you just don't know what to say because your people-pleasing brain is completely hijacking you. This is going to help you have clarity, confidence, and self-respect without the guilt, over-explaining, or the drama. Go ahead and grab it in the show notes below. It's totally free, and you're going to love it. Okay, now back to this awesome conversation. I had on the podcast a couple months ago, you know, a young doctor who's very much into, you know, the servant leadership and showing up and serving. And she's very invested in the policy of dentistry, but she was sharing it's kind of a dying, I guess, part of dentistry where not so many people are that interested in the policy side. And she had this saying, she's like, if you're not at the table making the rules, people are going to make them for you. And so it was kind of neat to be talking with somebody who's young in her career. She's about 3 years out. And she works on a reservation and really advocating, you know, for public health. But it made me actually think a little bit about, you know, AA even, because I was kind of drawing some parallels and how even here at a local level, it's really hard to get people that are in, you know, AA to show up and do service for general service or district or regional or anything like that, because people just kind of want to show up, go to meetings, and, you know, do what they want to do. And they don't think about, you know, the greater conscience of, you know, recovery and how their voice matters. And I could, the way she was speaking about it kind of had me draw some of those parallels. And is that a little bit of your experience? And if so, you know, what's some inspirational ideas or words you can give to people that are not really interested in the public or policy side of dentistry?
So I'll just kind of play off this young dentist who's working on an Indian reservation. You know, this year, HHS decided out of nowhere they were going to defund the Indian Health Service dental department. And they don't know the consequences of that. They're in an ivory tower in a four-walled room, have no idea the ripple effect of what that's going to do to the oral health of the Native American communities. And so first thing I did was call the president of the Society of American Indian Dentists and ask, how are we going to advocate to ensure that the funding so you can offer dental services gets reinstated? And it ended up getting reinstated, not fully, but mostly. And so the way I got into organized dentistry was I was pissed off about something, and I saw that organized dentistry was the biggest lever to make things happen. And so we are at a very volatile political period in the country's history, especially around oral health. And major changes could happen if we're not up there advocating for it. And who, you know, there's not that many legislators that are dentists, both at the federal level and the state level. And if we don't educate them, I think we have a professional obligation to educate them. They're going to make a decision based on the loudest voice. And if it doesn't come from us, it's going to come from the insurance industry. And because they have a very good market share of dentists who participate in their plans. And they can say, well, we speak for the dentist because we have a 90% market share. And so people don't see things unless it's hurting them. Unless it affects them, you know, then they get involved. And, you know, I learned early on that, you know, that to be the voice of reason for best practices in the spirit of improving the overall health of the community, our dentists, we also become more successful in our missions in providing that care. And so, but if we don't speak up, they don't know. The legislators don't know. You know, we're in a renaissance time where things are going to change, and the old guard is stepping aside. And I'm kind of like in that middle ground as a Gen Xer, but I start to see the younger dentists, especially, who are amazing communicators and are very passionate, but they also have, you know, different styles and different passions than say I do and the baby boomers do. And so there may be a little void for a little while, but if there's a pain point that is pressed, there's not too long of a wait before people, you know, start espousing, you know, hey, we need to do something, and organized dentistry is the best way to do it.
Do you think dentistry as we know it is being threatened? Do you think we're at this critical threshold?
Yeah, we're under attack. Absolutely. You know, let's look at fluoride, for instance. You know, it's 80 years of success and, you know, of reducing caries in our communities safely is being challenged by pseudoscience and non-science, by hype. And, you know, that's first. You know, student loans are being challenged, you know, and even dental hygiene was not classified as a profession. What the heck is that all about? You know, and so they don't get the benefits through student loans in their training. So dental school funding is going way down. Research was threatened. And most dental schools get a good portion of their, you know, of what they are there for is to drive research forward. And, you know, when we drive research forward, we drive the profession forward. You know, public health benefits are being, you know, threatened. They're on the chopping block. You know, and less than 50% of this country actually, you know, accesses dental care. You know, and if we lose the public health, we lose any chance of getting the other 50%. So everything we do is seems to be under attack right now, and we're heading towards a perfect storm until, you know, we can, you know, unless we can continue to advocate, I think dentistry is going to be much different. And the regulations that are going to govern how we practice is going to be threatened in big ways.
Yeah, you can almost feel a shift, you know, coming. So after experiencing what you did this last year, I'm sure you learned so much, just even in addition to all of your years as a leader and running your business and everything you've done. I'm sure this was an entirely new level of leadership that you learned and experienced. Do you have compassion now for people in those public leadership positions now, after experiencing what you experienced, and sometimes how narratives get spun and, you know, gossip and stories and things like that happen? Do you have more compassion, I guess, for people that are more public facing?
Absolutely. Leadership in any role could be a very lonely path. You know, even as a practice owner, I recognize that, you know, and I remember I was at a continuing education class with my team early on in my practice life. And I was sitting at a table behind my team, and this, you know, feeling overwhelmed me that, wow, my team, I need to be successful because my team is relying upon the practice being successful, and their families are being supported by their, you know, their jobs and their income. And I need to make sure that we are successful so they can live their best lives too. And so, but as leader of the practice, it's like, you know, who do you talk to about those kind of things? You know, and I was president of the Colorado Dental Association, and you know, I had a great board with me, but there were also times when it was just me. And I was standing at that crossroads, you know, and I had to, you know, make a decision. You know, and I had experienced that so many times as president of the Colorado Dental Association and also as president of the American Dental Association, that had I not been as grounded as I was with the, you know, who the organization was and what they stood for and what their vision, what their mission was, what their purpose is, it would have been very difficult. Because when I'm clear on those things and I'm clear on the direction of the organization as leader, every decision I make, does it bring us closer to that vision or does it move us further away? And so those were the guardrails upon which I had to make decisions on. But it is a lonely road. And thank goodness that I had people that I can bounce things off of, because a majority of people had their own ideas of the way things should go. And it was tough. They challenged. I can't tell you how many times I got asked, well, who gave you the authority to make that decision? And basically, you did when you voted me, or your representative did when they voted for me. But it was a lot of misunderstandings on their part and misrepresented expectations of what they feel is possible and what we should be doing. And I was playing, and I always do this, I play a long game, all right? And and unfortunately, we live in a culture that demands short-term wins. And I know the foundation that we established and are continuing to establish for the organization is going to be a foundation which we can build upon to make us and allow us to continue to be the most influential dental organization in the world. And I'm really proud of that. But it was tough, absolutely tough. And, you know, like I said, leadership is a lonely path. And thank God I was able to develop a support group that I could just vent and guide, you know, and drop things off on and help me reset myself to my true center.
Yeah, that's so important. What are some of the biggest, I mean, if you had to say like, you know, a handful of the biggest lessons you learned this last year, what would they be?
Like I got to, like I said, really, you know, keep the center with core values, mission, vision, reminding everybody who is members or anyone in the profession that this is who we are and this is what we stand for. And by keeping that front and center, it made it very clear for things. And then, you know, I didn't have to be everything to everyone. You know, and people pleasing is a trait for many dentists, especially we want to make sure our patients are happy, our staff is happy. And a lot of times we drift away from that true center just to kind of ease the tension of a disgruntled patient or ease the tension of a disgruntled member. But really, that's where the drift happens. And so it really helped me stay forward. And then, you know, knowing when I was being pushed to my triggers and identifying my own personality, my own personality traits that were coming out, my own physiology in the body when I'm stressed, I can recognize that. And I know I need to not answer a question because it could make things worse. And I needed to back off and say, you know, I need a day or two to figure this out and let's talk tomorrow. You know, I learned an awful lot about myself in the crucible. I was able to accomplish much more than I ever thought I could being under the crucible too. And that was pretty cool. You know, and I met so many people this year across the country and across the world. And it was such a blessing to be in the role that I was in. And the role that I was in afforded me the opportunities that very few get to do. You know, and I will take that with me everywhere I go and cherish it. Maybe someday I'll even write a book about it because it was so special.
Yeah,
it was so special.
What's next after such an incredible year and so many lessons and experiences? And my gosh, I mean, being able to process all of it and distill it and be with it, I'm sure so many emotions. But what's next on the horizon for you?
So wellness is a big part of who I am. And I felt I did a great job raising the narrative and raising the conversations above the line, talking about that. 82% of our colleagues are experiencing signs of clinical burnout. Substance abuse is way up. Depression is way up. Anxiety is way up. You know, we've got a mental health crisis in our profession going on, and it doesn't have to be that way. And I really feel that it is because many of us, you know, lost our way. You know, the same little drift that happened. And you know, and I think many are working as dentists, but they're not, you know, living out in their purpose. And I've got so much experience now. And I left that job as president as the most informed dentist in the world, just from the portfolio of experience that I got to experience over the course of the last several years. But I want to help dentists. I want to help our profession. And I want to help keep driving things forward. I am starting a leadership development coaching business where I can help people kind of get realigned into their purpose and align all their actions along that way to remind everyone that they can have great lives. And you don't have to hit rock bottom like I did to make changes. And, you know, and I hope that can be a great resource in that realm. I'm also on advisory board for a couple of startup companies, technology companies, which is very passionate. I'm very passionate about. And I'm also Dr. Rosato, current president, amazing leader. I think he'll go be remembered as one of the greats. He is, you know, has a project. One of his pillars is Oral Health 2050. What does the delivery of oral health look like 25 years from now? And so I'm chairing that work group to imagine what the delivery of oral health will look like. And so I get to, you know, kind of, I guess, amalgamate all of my experience into things that I'm passionate about to keep continue driving the profession forward. I'm not going back into clinical practice at this time, but I hope to do some mission trips with some of my friends out there that are organizing them. And so I can, you know, experience different cultures. And so I still get to do some clinical dentistry here and there because I loved being a dentist, you know, and then I want to get back into my endurance racing shape and maybe get some races on the calendar in the future and, you know, just live my life to the fullest extent like I always do.
Yeah. Well, that sounds incredible. And so when are you going to kick off the coaching biz?
So we're at the end of January right now. I hope to, you know, have everything finalized by early March and moving forward from there.
So excited to have you in the coaching space and everyone getting able to work with you. It's going to be the coolest.
Yeah, it's going to be fun getting to trudge this with you and march this with you. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, for sure. And I know you said you leaned a lot even on what you learned in recovery too over the last, like, I mean, it's ingrained in us anyways as we show up every day with the principles inside of us. But what aspects do you think did you lean on the most from your 20 plus years, almost 30 years sober, did you have to really go, okay, this principle is really key right now. I need to honor this.
Well, you know, I learned along my path, my why. And I am a catalyst for positive change in the world. That's my why. Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, was very impactful to me. And it made me really, you know, dig down and look at it. And I realized I had been doing that kind of thing, you know, catalyst for positive change. I was attracted to organizations and people who were in a growth phase and they were contributing positively to the world. And, you know, when we hit our bottoms, you know, I was at a crossroads. You know, do I want to live? Do I want to die? And that's scary for us. And when I chose that I wanted to live and I got humbled to recognize the state that I was in, that I needed help, and I decided and I was willing to do what it took to get that help, as I got better, I got inspired to live my best life. And so every day for me is a bonus day because, frankly, the way I was going, I should have been dead. On that day when I got sober, I could have very easily chose to end it, and I didn't. And so I want to maximize every day. And And, you know, and when I got into recovery, you know, and I still go to, you know, recovery meetings on a regular basis, and I work with other people in recovery. I surround myself with people in recovery, you know, and the people that are working their program actively are exciting people to be around. And they all have this feeling of every day is a bonus day. So that's really, you know, what drives me. And, you know, when I got sober, I wanted to use that as a catapult into living my best life. When I ran for president, I didn't want it to be the end. I wanted to be a catapult into something, you know, next and something bigger that I can use the experience to continue to be a catalyst for positive change in the world. And it's all driven from getting, you know, sober and working the recovery program that 12 Steps offer us.
Yeah, I hear a lot of humility and surrender still. Like, it's always a cycle like that for me too. And it sounds like when everything gets really, really tough and really hard, it's like you're surrendering to your why, you know, the primary thing that was driving you, and having the humility to go, all right, you know, I'm not going to fight this fight. You know, I want to get back to center. And you keep referencing that, which is great. I don't know what you've named your business yet, but maybe it could be Back to Center. Because I feel like you keep, that's something cool about you, is getting back to center. But I really love that you're saying that, because that's something I always talk about too, is a lot of people don't really know what their why. They don't know what's driving them, or they have something and it's not theirs. That's something I talk a lot about, is we get very conditioned to inherit other people's beliefs and what other people expect of us and want from us. And then we somehow convince ourselves that that's our why. And then we work as hard as we can. Because in dentistry, yeah, there's so much of an inner drive and inner competition and a desire to prove and a desire to be somebody. And a lot of dentists are making up for something that happened to them in their past, or, you know, and then you're in a profession where it's not as, you know, you get beat up a little bit, you know, compared to other doctors. And so there's so many layers to it. And if you're not really, really clear on what's important to you, and then actually honoring that, because a lot of people say, you know, oh, my family's my priority, and then they're home, you know, 1 hour a week, you know, they're right. They're working, or they're doing so many other things, and that someday when I get to that thing, then I'll be able to do this, you know, instead of living it every day. And that takes conscious work and conscious effort. So I think that's something that I see time and time again too, is people not having that core. And I love recovery a lot for that, and coaching. I always joke it takes a village to keep me on the beam, because it's so easy to forget, right? We remember, we forget. And I think the beauty of coaching and even the community of recovery is it consistently reminds me of who I am. And it's like, okay, right. You know, and so then I can stay on the beam a little bit longer and have that support and not doing it alone, versus getting swept up in the tide of society, culture, expectations, you know, what other coaches are doing, or other business people are doing, or what other dentists are doing, or entrepreneurs are doing. We're constantly looking and seeing, well, should I be doing that? And you can get lost in the sauce like real fast that way.
Yeah. If you stand for nothing, you fall for anything. A lot of us have, you know, drifted away from our purpose or never even identified their purpose. And, you know, I spoke to 31 dental schools over the last couple of years. And, you know, we talked about mission, vision, things like that. And I asked the dental students, raise your hand if you ever did a vision statement. And none of them raised their hands. And I reminded them, you did a personal statement when you applied to dental school of what you wanted to accomplish as a dentist. That's your first vision statement. Keep it in front of you. Remind yourself of the reason you went into this amazing profession. Because dentistry affords us the opportunity to live amazing lives. Okay, for dentists, mm-hmm. for dental hygienists, for dental assistants, for administrative staff, you know, if it's played right, okay? And I feel like, you know, what did I love most about being a dentist? You know, it's the relationships I had with my patients. It's the relationship I had with the team that I surrounded myself with. You know, and the impact that my work had on some of my patients was transformative for them. And, you know, and I got to experience that, you know, not just in my pocketbook, but in my heart. And my team got to, you know, experience that too, because they all contributed to that happening. We love that part. And you know, so, you know, translate this back into organized dentistry. The benefit system that we're in, it doesn't work. It's not working. And it's forcing us, because, you know, we haven't had an adequate raise in reimbursements in decades. The cap is limiting. It's restrictive. I had a different word in my head. I didn't say it because we're trying to be professionals here. But, you know, and it's really driving us to be, you know, we have to be a lot more high volume in the current, you know, practice model. And so we're treating teeth and we're not treating people. We're missing out on the fruits of that amazing relationship opportunities that we have with our patients. And so we burn out. And, you know, we have to remind ourselves to slow down. Where could we be more effective? You know, and in our practice, we can fuel that fire that's in our heart that fuels our passion. And when we don't get to do that, of course, we're going to burn out. And, and benefit system is definitely a big part of why that's happening. Benefit system that we're in is definitely a big part of why we're having workforce issues, because we can't afford to offer the career opportunities that we used to be able to offer to our office managers, our administrative personnel, our dental hygienists, our dental assistants, you know, because the money's just not there. But every part of that team is so important to the success of the patient outcomes. And it's not going well. And so things are about to really change. And I feel like we're on a track to do that. But, you know, the doctor-patient relationship is a sacred cow for me. And I know it's for many, you know, but we have to intentionally find ways to make that a bigger part of our practice lives. Because as I said, dentistry offers us this opportunity to live amazing lives, but we forget to do that because we're so busy and then burned out or exhausted at the end of the day from the work that we had to go through just to make ends meet. But with that, I feel like the golden age of dentistry is right in front of us. You know, I had, you know, one of my pillars last year was wellness. I think we discussed that enough today. But my second one was reconnecting the mouth to the body. And, you know, we learn in dental school how important oral health is into the overall health of our patients. But the benefit systems that we're in disconnects that for us. And that's not right. There's too much evidence that shows the importance of improving oral health and overall health, that we can't ignore it anymore. And we're seeing a movement of dentists who are exploring whole health dentistry. You know, Dr. Pankey, you know, taught us, I never had a tooth walk into my office. Get to know that person that's attached to those teeth, and we may be able to treat their oral conditions. And I see that happening now, you know, in a movement that's amazing. I'm in Denver, Colorado, and we just had the Rocky Mountain Dental Convention this past weekend in downtown Denver. And, you know, I think over half of the convention was dedicated to medical dental integration and exploring the opportunities. Imagine if the benefit system, you know, paid us appropriately for the work we did, you know, tying those two things together. That's what we're working on. Mm-hmm. And it's I think the beauty of the future is really bright. So I'm excited.
Heck yeah. I love that. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Dr. Brett Kessler, you are the absolute best. Always love having you on. I could talk to you all day and just soak up all your wisdom. I'm super excited for seeing what you create this next year. You're such a force, and I know you'll do it with 100% heart and determination and just a lot of love for the profession and for the people that you can impact. Thanks for being you. Thanks for always being your authentic self and being such a role model for what's possible and continuing to do the work and showing up every day, one foot in front of the other. And just your commitment is super inspiring. And I'm honored to call you a friend and thank you for the impact you've had on my life, which continues to unfold in the coolest of ways. So thank you for that. The ripple effect that you're committed to has definitely been impactful. So thank you so much. You're the best.
No, it's great to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to share some of my observations and experience with you and anyone who's listening. And, you know, and I always just want to say, if anyone's struggling out there, reach out for help. Help's available. Doesn't have to be that way. You know, we remind yourself you are your most valuable asset. Take care of yourself as such. So thank you.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices, it's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.